Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Cobb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Dr. Andrew Rostenberg, who is the, the founder of Beyond MTHFR website and soon to be author of a book by the same name. And today we're going to be talking about the genetic roots of pain and anxiety. I first became aware of Dr. Rostenberg's work through Eva Hare, who is a friend of mine, who is also studying specifically depression, anxiety, and the genetic roots of that through MTHFR and other detoxification defects. I have a clinic full of patients, there's probably over 100,000 out there waiting to come in, of patients who have defective breast implants, silicone implants that are leaking chemicals, and saline implants that are moldy with biotoxin disease, but specifically the chemical problem. Most of them have MTHFR or COMT or other detoxification defects, and when these implants start to leak, they have a whole host of hydrophobic chemicals that go into their system and cause a lot of problems. Of course, depression, anxiety, and chronic pain are in all of these patients, and therefore I became interested in the genetic roots of pain and anxiety. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Rostenberg.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Kolb. I appreciate the opportunity to come back on your show.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about some of these detoxification defects causing pain and anxiety, and I guess also depression is something that is more common in these patients as well. Is that correct?
You're absolutely right. And I hope that, your listeners can get an idea of, I want to share kind of the simple big idea with everybody, because I think when we talk about genetics and we start using acronyms like SNPs and COMT and MTHFR and MAOA and SULT, it kind of people's eyes glaze over a little bit. So, these are issues that everybody deals with. I mean, I don't think there's a person alive who hasn't felt anxious at some point in their life, depressed at some point in their life, and experienced pain. And I know, as you're aware, I mean, we meet patients and they seek our help because they can't get out of that situation. And a healthy body has the ability to adapt to pretty much an infinite number of situations. So we have a huge capacity to heal. I always like to point out to my patients that our body is in fact perfect. It makes no mistakes, never has, never will. We don't get sick because of some error in our body. We get sick because of a genetic tendency that we inherit, plus an environmental insult, the importance of your work looking at, women who've had cosmetic breast surgery. Now they have these foreign foreign chemicals potentially, or very likely, as you say, leaking into their body, and that's an environmental challenge that makes them ill. And it's not something they were born with, but it's the gene plus the environment. I just want to remind everybody where our genes are your tendency, not your destiny. But when we're under stress, when we're exposed to something toxic, those genes will express themselves and make themselves known. And I see my role in the world of functional medicine and health and nutrition is helping people identify, which symptoms and patterns they're feeling and their loved ones are going through and which genes are most related to that.
Well, one thing my patients are coming in and asking about is testing for MTHFR. Would you like to talk about what MTHFR is and what the genetics cause a problem with B12 and folate, and then how that can go on to cause high homocysteine and increased risk of heart attack and stroke, kind of that pathway?
Sure, yeah. Another great part of the discussion, methylation, that's the word that we're talking about. It's a process in every cell that we have. It doesn't matter if it's a neuron in the brain or a white blood cell or a gut cell or an eyeball or a, you know, or literally every cell we have has this pathway, and so it's fundamental to who we are. It's the 2x4s and the fasteners that build the frame, and then all the other things we do puts the color and the shape on. But absolutely. So, you know, we test for MTHFR in my office. To be fully honest, most patients come to me already having their genes tested because mm-hmm. they find my work because they get the gene tested. They find out that they have an MTHFR polymorphism, we call it. Either usually the ones that are the most common are C677T or A1298C. And, you know, those are just the nerdy scientific labels we give them. They're just what the scientists name them and how they talk to themselves. But a lot of times, you know, patients are doing a saliva test. So that's probably for your listeners who are interested in going down that road. Doing saliva testing gives you the most value. It's certainly, you know, it's $99 right now if you mm-hmm. use the company Ancestry DNA. And, you know, none of these companies, you know, pay me to say this. I give this advice several times a week. So I'm kind of aware of which companies are doing what. And then there's 23andMe, and 23andMe is the most popular. They used to be $99 for a couple of years. Now it's like $270. They're both equivalent, okay? So most people are going to do whichever one they're most familiar with, but just know there's two competing ones out there, 23andMe and Ancestry DNA. And you send in your saliva, and about a month later, you'll receive emails that say, hey, we've unlocked your genetic code. We've plugged it into our program, and here's your ancestry. Here's where you're from. And by the way, these are all your risks of XYZ disease. And I want to caution mm-hmm. your listeners, you know, and repeat this again and again, that, you know, their risk of disease is not important, okay, because they're comparing us against averages. And since, you know, so many people in our society are so sick, the averages are practically meaningless, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, we get confused because something's common. We think it's normal, you know, having 150 million Americans have diabetes and diabetes or pre-diabetes. So we would say maybe diabetes is the normal state of the human body. We know that's not true. So mm-hmm. long story short on that, saliva testing is your biggest bang for your buck. Some doctors still use blood tests, but to me it seems a little archaic. It's expensive, mm-hmm. and then you only get two genes back. If you do the genetic testing, you get this raw data file that you can have another company interpret. So it sounds like, you know, if you're just hearing this for the first time, it sounds a little convoluted, but just do a little search online. It's really not that bad. And you get this mm-hmm. great report. It's maybe, you know, 40 pages long, shows you all kinds of genes. And people like myself, experts in the field, will help interpret that for you. So that's the best way to test your genetics is to do it with saliva, especially if you're working with children or, you know, people who don't want to get their, you know, draw blood. But
these defects... MTHFR, like, is a defects in methylation, and there's other defects in sulfonation and other ways that we use to get chemicals out of the body. I mean, obviously, we live in an environment that even if you don't have breast implants, you have a lot of chemical toxicity. So many of the chronic illnesses we have now are actually problems with detox. You know, too many chemicals in and not enough ability to get the chemicals out, and then they affect functional pathways. So I think there's a whole list of the acronyms of the genetic defects. It's not just a couple of them. There's a whole page of them. So I'm not real familiar
Absolutely
with
right.
all of them, but it seems to me that they just have problems getting the detoxification pathways to work.
You're exactly right. And, you know, just to point out to the listeners, you know, when we talk about genes, we're really talking about enzymes, right? I mean, the mm-hmm. DNA doesn't detox anything. The DNA is just a code to make something that performs an action, right? So
right.
the DNA is the blueprint, the instruction file, the wisdom of how to build this thing. And then the body has to make it. And so when we have changes to your DNA a little bit, what you end up making, the final product, just has a little bit different speed or a different shape that affects how well it works. And, you know, Dr. Kolb, you're definitely hitting the nail on the head with this, that, you know, we have had the same genes in our body for a very, very long time. But we've never seen people sick like we do now in a chronic disease state. So we do have all these chemicals. You know, the last I heard it was 80,000 or maybe 100,000 chemicals invented during the 20th century and released into the environment. Many of them are still with us. And you're right. So the body has the ability. It's a fantastic system. It's incredible that when you inhale a piece of a smell of the car exhaust or the diesel truck, or you walk by someone that, you know, out
or
and about.
Or even pump your own gas, which we used to not do. You know, people used to come out and put gas in the car for us.
Well, that's
people,
true.
I mean, gasoline, most people don't remember that, but I do because I'm almost 62, you know.
So what happens is, in order to remove these toxins, we have to use minerals and cofactors, and we have to have little enzymes that grab this molecule that's like organic chemical molecule, hold on to it, and transform it into something that, as you said earlier in your show, becomes more water-soluble. So you mentioned that a lot of the toxins that you're seeing coming out of your patients because of their silicone implants are hydrophobic.
Right.
So, you know, they're gonna reside in the fat tissue. The breast has a lot of fat tissue. Certainly the brain is 80% fat by weight. So absolutely. So these genetic defects, and I don't even like that word, but the genetic changes we have make us more, some enzymes go faster, some go slower, and it's like a traffic jam. I mean, you end up needing, some people have to have a lot more folate and B12 daily in their diet. Some people need 5,000 micrograms of folate every day. And that's not very common, but some people do. And that's the individual part of this process is figuring out which patient, you know, needs what. But definitely looking at the genes helps us in a detective fashion figure out where the body needs the most support, and that helps people move forward.
I want to interject something now that is important about folate. There was a study done in nuns showing that of all of the things that was most important for women not to get, these women not to get Alzheimer's, it was adequate folate in the diet. And I recently read the work of William Croft, who has a theory that much of the Alzheimer's is due to a chemical to kill warble flies in beef. So if you eat non-organic beef with this chemical in it and you have a certain detoxification defect, which my family happens to have, so this is very personal for me, that you don't detox this chemical. And one of the ways you can detox this chemical better, especially if you have this genetic defect, is to have adequate folate in your body. So that links that study to probably the cause of at least some of the causes of the things that cause Alzheimer's. Of course, you can avoid the whole thing by eating organic beef.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to vote with our dollar, and you know, if money is not, you know, abundant in our life at the moment, you know, you can still look up the clean 15 vegetables from the Environmental Working Group and eat the cleanest. You know, they're the non organic foods that the safest for you. And then of course, know about the Dirty Dozen also, which are the foods that have, you know, the highest level of pesticides. And absolutely, we have to play defense every day. It's you know, the price of our health is eternal vigilance. I mean, it's
and
kind of
really,
like the thing,
you know,
about
if you look
liberty
at those lists, it's mainly the things with big, you know, heavy things that you take off before you eat the fruit. You know, so like grapefruits and avocados and things that have big shells, you don't need to buy organic. But things like grapes and berries and cherries and things that have thin shells, even apples, you best do organic.
You're right. You're absolutely right, Doctor. And, you know, I'm a dad. I've got young kids. It's a little freaky, a little scary how things are, you know, the challenges we're all facing with our health. But, I mean, that's part of what motivates us and certainly myself to, you know, just learn as much as we can about why people get sick and how we can help them. And I think one thing I'd like to share with your audience, since you brought this point up, is, you know, the And this was in the news last week. I think that Bayer, the big pharmaceutical agricultural conglomerate out of Germany, bought Monsanto.
Yeah, that's amazing.
$6 billion. So, yeah, good for them, right? Pat them, there you go. Now you have this super company that owns who knows what. But we now know, and it was a Google patent. So, well, not a Google patent, but I found it on a Google search. It was a United States Patent Office 2002 that the active ingredient in Roundup and all the GMO, the main GMO pesticide was recently, as of 2002, patented as an antibiotic. So that was a big eye-opener for me a few weeks ago during this research. It's like, okay, so now we have a food system grown with genetically modified seeds with foreign DNA and virus DNA in the food, and now they're spraying glyphosate all over the food in a consistent basis. It gets soaked into the soy, to the corn, and that gets fed to animals, so it gets into our animal food, and it's, you know, they're spraying these pesticides on all kinds of different crops. But the problem that these pesticides have on us is not, it's something we do have to detox, you're exactly right, but it's literally on its way into our body going to kill our gut bacteria like an antibiotic.
Right.
And I think
which is why I take probiotics every day. And a lot of people probably should too. Your gut bacteria
we really should
under siege.
We are. And so when I looked, I've looked into this and some of the research I've done with depression and anxiety, kind of to tie that together with the genes. And I started to, basically what happened to me as a doctor, you know, I'd start learning about methylation and, you know, I see about 75 or 80 patients a week. So I have a lot of opportunity to work with different people. And some people reacted beautifully to folate or B12, to the B vitamins. Mm-hmm. It's like that was the missing ingredient. Their face lit up, their depression lifted, their cognition sharpened, and they were off and running, you know, never looked back. And then there's a even bigger group, however, that don't seem to respond well when they walk into a doctor's office and say, you know, I have chronic fatigue, I have insomnia, my libido is terrible, I've got a lot of anxiety, my body hurts, and, you know, my digestion is terrible. And if we just give them B vitamins, even though we have a genetic report that says that they need them, if we just throw B vitamins at them based on their genes and kind of ignore the clinical picture and the patient,
right.
I've made, you know, full disclosure, we had some less than optimum results. We flared some people up, but, you know, we learned quickly that that was not the right way to start with people. And so we're tying everything back now, and a lot of the work we're doing to lack of healthy gut bacteria.
Right. Or
an overgrowth of the wrong kind. And so, you know, I'm seeing GMOs, I'm seeing stress, killing gut bacteria. People are on antibiotics, they're killing their gut bacteria. And you know, we make tryptophan, and we make tyrosine only in our gut bacteria, or it comes from our diet. So our body doesn't have, there's zero capability for our body to make tyrosine or tryptophan. And that's important for our listeners to understand, because tyrosine and tryptophan are what we make dopamine and serotonin out of.
Right.
And in my research into PubMed over the last few months, I found a study from last year. And I think this is the first of many studies that are going to come out. I'm hopeful that there's PhDs out here working on this, doctor. And what they found was, if you've had five rounds of antibiotics, they used penicillin in this study, but five rounds in your whole life, okay, and I meet people who've had 50 rounds or 100 on a weekly basis, and I'm sure you do too.
Oh yeah.
If you've had five rounds of antibiotics in your lifetime, then your risk of anxiety and depression goes up by 50%.
Well, that's because of yeast overgrowth, you know, in the gut. And what I tell people is, once you develop candidiasis, you basically always have to. I always recommend nystatin oral solution or a equivalent supplement that kills yeast in the gut with antibiotics for the rest of their life if they have an episode of candidiasis, because they're going to get anxiety, they're going to get yeast overgrowth, bad bacteria, and if you don't fix it, they'll never get well. I mean, the yeast just stay in the gut, and every time they eat carbs or sugar, is gonna grow, and then they're gonna release alcohols and aldehydes, and they're gonna get sick.
Oh, you're so right. That's in a nutshell. That's it. And you know, that's So what I want, you know, I guess the message I would like to leave with your listeners with on this idea is that if you've had bad results, you know, going to doctors or getting online with doing research and joining Facebook groups and trying supplements, and you read about how good a supplement is for a problem that you have, and it like makes you worse, and it's this weird sort of paradoxical reaction. Take Dr. Kolb's advice and heed what I'm saying, and look at your gut first, because all those vitamins are like fertilizer, you know. Right. And if you're fertilizing yeast with CoQ, you know, with B2 and B9 and all these great nutrients,
they love it.
Speed up. Yeah, it's fertilizer. They love it. They go
That's
crazy.
Right. Yeah. Now, one of the things and that just blew me away, and I'm sure it did when you heard about it too, is Dr. Perlmutter's study that he took a group of patients with adult-onset diabetes, did fecal transplants, and cured all of them. Now, that is just amazing.
That is true. That I love that book, Brain Maker. Great book. And Dr. Perlmutter is a cool guy. Yeah. That, you know,
but that
shows
you the importance of gut bacteria to health, because, you know, insulin resistance and adult-onset diabetes is, I mean, the vast majority of our population, because of the effect of high fructose corn syrup and the diet we have, everybody's got, you know, metabolic syndrome when they're over 50.
Absolutely.
And they're headed that way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've thought about this a lot as well with a lot of my patients, and, you know, I kind of feel like what happens to people is it didn't start necessarily as a gut problem. It may have started as a divorce or a bad food allergy, or, you know, a bad breast implant, or some botched surgery or something. Something happens, something stressful enters people's lives. And then the body goes into this prolonged fight or flight reaction. And then, of course, you have the choices. You have people eating chicken nuggets and pizza, macaroni and cheese. Like, they're still 5 years old, but they're 15 or 25.
Sugar and carbs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But see, so yeah, so I would, you know, would I, yeah, so yeah, if you replace all the gut bacteria in your colon and you can cure diabetes, I mean, hopefully not everybody has to go through a transplant. You know, to me, it's kind of like an extreme intervention, but still, I've had other patients do it and it's not a big hassle for people. I think they can actually learn how to do it in their own house. But yeah, the gut is, the gut has 100 times more genes. So when we talk about genes and we talk about the COM-T, the MTHFR pathway being imbalanced, and it's good to focus on those, it's important to realize too, and this I heard from Dr. Stephen Gundry on one of his interviews, that the DNA in the gut, if you were to put on a scale and then weigh the DNA in the body, there's 100 times more DNA in our gut. It's crazy. So whose DNA influences who more? You know?
Right. Well, I can tell you two things that I use in people with pre-diabetes or, you know, the really, really bad gut issues. I always use applied kinesiology, so I do that with everything. So before I give them a probiotic, I'll muscle test it. But the results are Bifilon or VSL number 3. Now, VSL number 3 is a prescription. It's the only prescription probiotic that is being used for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease. And a Crohn's disease, by the way, is paratuberculosis. So that's a very interesting thing. And they get it from milk. So I tell my Crohn's patients to avoid milk. But
wow,
basically,
that's something new I haven't
yeah,
heard. Okay,
it really
so
is.
And
you know, the more intuitive
agent,
ones know that. It's really funny. I'm not telling them anything
wow.
they don't know. But I muscle test Bifilon, which is over the counter. It's made by QOL Labs, and it's just one bacteria. It's just one bacteria, and then VSL number 3 is just one bacteria too, but they're similar. And what they do is they help reverse the gut bacteria problem that causes prediabetes. So hopefully you can do it then and not have to do a fecal transplant when you have full-blown diabetes.
Absolutely, yeah. Guys, I mean, you can take, there's so many tools like you're talking about, Dr. Kolb, that you can do, at home to keep your gut healthy. We prescribe coffee enemas several times a week to patients. We do them in my own house as needed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of...
They're cheap.
You know, when
coffee enemas are a very cheap way to clean out problems, toxic problems. That's very true.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we talk a little bit about the anxiety and depression connection to everything?
Yeah. All of my patients come in anxious, and they all seem to have GABA deficiencies.
True.
So
yeah,
how do they get that
as well. And, you know, so what my take on this whole issue with genes and everything, and what I write about on my blog, beyondmthfr.com, what I write on that blog and what I'm putting into the book, and it's going to get to an editor here in a couple weeks, is I want to simplify the issue, but not simplify it more than it should be. And so,
right,
what we've worked to do is to determine different phenotypes, and I like to introduce this word so people kind of have it in their lexicon and in their vocabulary. And so, like when someone diagnoses an individual with diabetes. Diabetes is a phenotype, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you were born with. It's something
right.
that the genetics you have that you were born with and the environment that was built around you or that you were exposed to over years created.
Mm-hmm.
So it's genes plus environment over time. That's the phenotype.
Right.
And with anxiety and depression, there's people who just tend to be very depressed, and there's people who tend to be... just more anxious. In other words, so I try to divide people up. I ask them questions like, okay, the person who has a low catecholamine or low dopamine phenotype, that was more how I used to be. You could fall asleep at the drop of a hat. You might be 3 o'clock mm-hmm. in the afternoon driving in the car for 20 minutes and you fall asleep. You eat food,
right.
eat a meal, and you fall asleep. You fall asleep in movies. And compare that to somebody who has high dopamine. They are having insomnia. Like they may be up without sleeping for
mm-hmm.
1, 2, or 3 nights straight.
Right.
And so when our patients come in with this, I like I try to imagine try to get a sense of which neurotransmitters are out of balance. Just looking at the adrenaline dopamine group
mm-hmm.
and the serotonin melatonin, the monoamines over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, based on, hundreds of patients over the last couple of years who've come in for this, the most common problem we're treating is the high catecholamine phenotype. And for example, dopamine is the parent of adrenaline. So we have dopamine, we have adrenaline. All the adrenaline that we make in our body is first a molecule of dopamine. It has to get converted to norepinephrine, and then it becomes epinephrine. But those compounds have to get detoxified, just like everything leaking out of a improper breast implant or, from the cologne that the woman next to you and, at the store is wearing. All these things, all these chemicals, whether it's a neurotransmitter, a GMO pesticide, have to get detoxed in your liver. So if the liver can't clear the neurotransmitters, then you're going to have too many of them. I mean, it's just simple logic, right? If you keep making
mm-hmm.
it at the same rate, but you get rid of it at a reduced speed, then the pile of this stuff is going to get bigger. And so that's the simple way I like to present it to patients and doctors and say, look, our job is to help find that balance. So we don't want to give someone anything. If someone has a problem with anxiety and they're in a state of panic and they're worrying a lot and they have incessant obtrusive thoughts, they have insomnia, they it takes them 2 hours to fall asleep, they sleep for an hour and a half, they wake up for an hour, they go back to sleep for 3,
mm-hmm.
and that's their night. It's been that way for months or maybe years. If that's where they're stuck, we've done hundreds of organic acid tests to test neurotransmitters to corroborate this. They're dopamine dominant. And so we have to be real careful about the tools we choose and the supplements we would give them. We don't want to raise dopamine anymore. In fact, we want to help them get rid of dopamine. And so we approach the problem from that perspective, and it's been really helpful for patients. We start with gut problems because, you know, we think, well, where does dopamine, why is dopamine and adrenaline being released in the first place? Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. Anything that creates sympathetic or fight or flight stress, so any gut infection, any unresolved, you know, virus infection, any, you know, candida infection, as you brought up earlier, divorce, school stress, social stress, life stress, it's a big group of things, but they will raise the fight or flight system in the body, mm-hmm. and then the body literally produces, synthesizes, and releases more dopamine and epinephrine, and that can, so we have to treat that side of the equation too. But the genes that get in the most way of this are the COMT, in my opinion. That's a huge one, especially for women, because the COMT gene is responsible for not only detoxifying and helping the body break down and remove dopamine and adrenaline, which creates anxiety, it also mm-hmm. removes estrogen. So that's a lot of heavy lifting by one pathway.
Right. I wanted to interject here. The other part of my practice, which I mentioned in the beginning, was the saline defective implants, which usually have mold in or around them. And so these patients come in, sometimes they have a moldy environment that got them infected, but a lot of times they just have, you know, they just have mold in the implant. And some of my patients developed severe anxiety because they were in a moldy classroom, like a college student that has a new class in a moldy building. So they develop new onset anxiety, and they muscle test that they're GABA deficient, and then we kind of figure out where it is they're getting exposed to the mold. Now, what's interesting is, you know, they go to the psychiatrist because they're having anxiety. They get put on Xanax or some other medicine for anxiety, but of course that's not treating the cause. And if you can find out the cause, oftentimes then you can treat the problem, and you won't have to be on a medication or a supplement, or, you know, especially a medication like Xanax, which can be very cause dependent. So GABA deficiency is big in my practice for anxiety, but I agree with you that if they have a lifelong anxiety situation with what you described, it's more likely to be dopamine and catecholamine. But so if somebody has a new onset, especially if they're in a building that they haven't been in before, they can be having a mold exposure causing a GABA deficiency.
That's absolutely right. And when you know the toxins you mentioned earlier, you mentioned alcohol and aldehydes mm-hmm. that come from mold, right? They come from mold.
Well, yeast primarily, but mold, there's so many different kinds of mold, and we don't even know all the different biotoxins. I mean, only a few of them have been studied, but people get deathly ill with mold. And many, I mean, the symptom list is 30 or 40 different symptoms. It disrupts the endocrine system at the level of the hypothalamus by damaging leptin receptors. It damages the neurological system because the biotoxins are neurotoxins. It damages the immune system via T-cell immunity, and it damages the metabolic system because it can uncouple the Krebs cycle. So, good Lord, the symptoms are incredible when people, like the moldy buildings after the hurricanes in Louisiana, and, you know, but they just... Anybody who studies this and publishes in it loses their medical license. It's basically, you know, you're not allowed to talk about it.
Yeah, crabs in a bucket. They're, you know, the people who are going to rise up and shine light on something to help people, they're pulled down and ostracized. So that's a bad cultural phenomenon. That's too bad.
Well, big business and government, they don't want the workman's comp liability. They don't want the liability, you know, if people get sick in their buildings.
You know what? You're another.
And they don't want to pay to clean the buildings up, you know.
The name of the game is just shifting liability from one person to the next. And
Yeah.
Or one entity. So, you know, everybody listening out there, you really are on your own. You need to you need to reach out. You need to reach out to Dr. Kolb and people like her, and you know, and keep these doctors who are fighting to shed light on what's going on. Keep them. They need your support. You know, I get an enormous amount of support, and I appreciate that. But you know, that's how we change things. Is we just start. We build a model that's so much better than what they're using that it's just their way of doing things is obsolete.
I would seek out functional medical doctors, people who are trained like Dr. Rostenberg and I are trained in functional medicine. If you investigate on the internet who is claiming to be a functional medicine doctor. And then it's really great if they do applied kinesiology, because that saves you a whole bunch of testing fees.
Oh, man.
You know, some holistic doctors
will
order.
Applied kinesiology is a gift from God. I love it.
It really is.
Yeah.
So that really saves you a lot of money. And then once you get the applied kinesiology results, then you do the appropriate testing. Yes, I mean, you can show what you have via the test, and that's fine. But applied kinesiology is a real good skill to look for in a functional medical doctor. And you know, many chiropractors, many naturopaths, many holistic health coaches, and you can get a degree in applied kinesiology. So, you know, people have degrees in this, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, let me ask you, Dr. Kolb. I mean, how often do you have patients coming in, bringing you a stack of tests that you look at and, you know, realize they probably spent $3,000 or $4,000 or more out of pocket on tests?
Yeah, what a waste of money.
Truly.
Because you and I would figure out what's wrong with them and then do the test, and probably 80% of the tests we run would be abnormal. You know. Rather than 90% being normal.
I love and I hate tests. I mean, you know, I mean, I love them because they can help us see things that otherwise we can't find. But, you know,
right.
I hate them because people just do them and then they don't explain to the patient what the test means. And that's all they do.
Right.
It's like, you know, so I think in the future for the medical, you know, the average doc in the box type deal, I mean, I'm sure they're making robots that you're going to walk in and talk to a robot. You're going to tell the robot the symptoms. It's going to run an algorithm and have a drug pop out of its belly with a prescription or whatever. And that's what they're going to do, you know. And it's
cookbook
not thinking.
Medicine. They're trying to make us do that in order to get paid. You know, in other words, if you don't do the algorithm, the HMO or the Medicare or whatever doesn't want to pay you your fee.
Yeah, I heard something as a young student doctor that stuck with me for a very long time, and it definitely changed the course of my practice, because I ended up, you know, I built a cash practice, pretty reasonable fees. We serve people really on a high level. We don't charge very much for our time, and so, you know, we kind of avoided that whole insurance quandary. But you know, it was a doctor told me, he said, you know, I can be a doctor. I can go to school and have these credentials, and someone can pick up the phone at an insurance company with a GED and tell me how to practice. I'm like, okay, that seems like screwed up leverage. You know, that's not right.
It does.
to your listeners, I want, you know, nothing bothers me more, or nothing kind of pulls at my, you know, soft, squishy parts more than when I hear about young people or adults who get sick, and then they get the mental health aspects of that you talked about earlier, the anxiety or the depression, and then they're just medicated into oblivion without anybody ever taking the time to ask, what's your environment like? Did you get, you know, to do the detective work necessary to figure it out? I mean, it's like we're living in this, I think we treat mental health kind of like the Civil War doctors treated injuries, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many great tools now, because we have the methylation and these SNP, testing and this understanding. Mm-hmm. People with MTHFR problems are predisposed, not guaranteed, but predisposed to have a low level of lower level of dopamine and serotonin because the active form of folate is required to make dopamine and serotonin.
Right.
So when you have,
and not folic acid. Do you want to explain why folic acid isn't going to work for people with MTHFR? And that's
absolutely
what's in everything. That's in every multivite. It's in all of the, I mean, folate is rare.
If you see folic acid in a supplement, at this point, with all the data that's out there, the company is cheap and lazy, and you shouldn't do business with them. You go find some. Go find one that's got the folate version. And the reason there's a difference between folic acid and folate, I mean, there's just one little molecular change to the chemical, is that your body, when you have an MTHFR issue, and I should point out that this is millions and millions and millions of people, at least 44% of North American Caucasians have one copy of this methylation problem. So it's not like
a rare disease.
It's just something that, it's not rare. Everybody's got it some way. I've never seen a genetic report that didn't have something screwed up on it. And I've seen, hundreds and, 500 or 600 at this point. So folic acid is a type of B9 that was invented or created in a lab. I've actually learned that the gut bacteria can make it some too. So it's not actually scientifically accurate to say that folic acid is the synthetic form of B9 because not to split the hair too much, but our gut bacteria is incredible. Like you say, it's so diverse. We don't even know everything that lives in our gut. But this it's like a vitamin factory. So some of the B9 that our gut makes is folic acid and some is folate. But the problem is that when you have MTHFR issues and you take folic acid, that's the traffic jam. The traffic jam is converted.
You can't convert it into something
into folate.
Useful. Right.
Yeah. So it backs up. It's a cork in the wine bottle. So now you get people with taking high doses of folic acid, and now you have all this unmetabolized vitamin like floating around in the blood, and it's like, and so then it starts to block and compete for getting into the cell with the active form. So it becomes like a prodrug almost, like a competitive inhibitor of the system. And so you just, a little bit of folic acid, is out there. It's in your gut. It's always in your body. That's okay. But you can't be taking it in the supplement because you're going to get it.
Let me tell you why it's not just supplement. A long time ago, the government figured out that it was a folate deficiency that caused neural tube defects in children or in newborns. So they fortified everything with folic acid because they didn't realize that folic acid was cheap. They didn't realize that folic acid would cause problems in people with these genetic defects. So you don't have to take just supplements. You can get it in your regular food.
That's a perfectly said. When you eat processed food, I mean, it's so when you go and get gluten-free or, pasta or brown rice, or you're eating quinoa, these rich grains that have a lot of nutrition, there's no folic acid in it. They haven't been bleached, strained, drained, crushed, molded, and reformed, okay? But when you eat standard American food, it's all loaded with folic acid. So it's another reason You're exactly right. And it does. But one of the benefits of this was, it did prove beyond a doubt that neural tube defects are methylation problems. Of course, there's better ways to take care of it than folic acid, for sure.
They just didn't know about the detoxification defects when they did this. I mean, they didn't realize.
No, and getting them to admit a mistake and change course is, be waiting a long time.
Yeah.
So you might, again, we're on our own. We do it ourselves until, eventually things change.
One thing I found out on muscle testing is that some patients with MTHFR, especially the more serious ones, they should only take their methylated B12 and folate vitamin twice a week. And I think that's not because of the B12. We can actually give them B12 shots, a methyl B12 shots, and they do great. So high doses of methyl B12 help with the silicone toxicity. I think it helps cure the nerve disease. But if you try to give too much methyl folate, they seem to get tired, and they muscle test that they have a lot of viruses. Have you seen the viral load go up with too much methyl folate?
I have seen patients flare up and have headache and inflammatory reactions with too much methylfolate. Absolutely.
I think it might be via the viruses, because they all have viral loads as well, because they have a T-cell immunity defect, and so they have viruses, parasites, intracellular infections, and mold and yeast. So that's typical of my patient. They have all five.
Well, they
basically don't have T-cell immunity, so that's a problem.
Have you heard of the GCMAF, the NADHylase and GCMAF?
No, stuff? What does it do?
Okay, so when we're healthy, we take vitamin D3 and we stick a sulfur molecule on it. We get a sulfated vitamin D, and it is a macrophage activating factor. So it's like G-coupled protein macrophage activating factor, which is the abbreviation GCMAF. And it's pretty interesting. You should check it out. I won't spill the beans too much on the air. But it has to do with, it's the most potent activator of macrophages that science has ever discovered. There doesn't seem to be any toxicity to it. And people with chronic viruses or even chronic cancer, because the same natural killer cell is responsible, right, for killing the virus infected as well as the cancer infected cell. It's showing some real promise, and it's available in the United States as a dermatological cream. So it helps to restore people's sulfation pathways, maybe for another call or another conversation, but it's something worth looking into.
I'm sorry, repeat what it is again.
So it's abbreviated capital G, lowercase c, M is in Mary, A-F, G-C-M-A-F.
Oh, yeah. You can also get it in Bravo yogurt. I do it every day in
really?
Bravo yogurt.
It's sold in a yogurt?
Yeah, you know, the guy that wrote Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. He has it on his website, www.marsvenus.com. If you put in Bravo yogurt, you can buy starter kits. And basically the GC map thing was what killed 36 holistic doctors, the ones that found out about it.
Yeah.
So talking about it is quite dangerous. So we won't do it on this radio show.
Yeah,
but anyway, GC map is an activator for all of that stuff, including cancer prevention. That's absolutely true. But it's your immune system. So what I like to do is the Bravo yogurt every day. And if you have a group of friends, you can give each of them some yogurt. And then when you don't have any more starter yogurt, you can borrow some back from them. So
that's cool. I'll have to look into that. I didn't know it could be delivered so easily in a yogurt form.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is in a cream. You're right. Now, we used to give it injectable for cancer. It was available injectable for cancer, I think, out of England. But that has all been shut down by the powers that be. And, of course, many, many... Erin Mercola is a friend of mine, and she's been documenting all the murders. So I think there's 36 murders now of holistic doctors, chiropractors, all sorts of doctors that have been killed because they were promoting GCMAP and then also telling people what not to do to get it depleted. We won't mention that on the air either. But anyway, yeah, so GCMAP is a great thing if you can get it in any way. If you can increase your production of it, your immune system goes up.
Yeah, I just thought, with women and their, sensitive breast tissue and lymphatic inflammation in the upper chest, it might be a nice thing to rub into that, just rub into the
lymph nodes. Yeah, do you have a particular cream that you prefer?
Yeah, well, I do. I have a woman that distributes it out of Michigan, and it's called Reactivated Wellness is her website.
And okay, what is it again?
Reactivated Wellness.
Reactivated Wellness. Okay.
Yes, and she will provide samples for you to use. I'm sure even your listeners might be able to reach out and get some samples.
Well, we'll look at that.
She's pretty generous
about that. That is something definitely to do. Yeah, the GCMAP is definitely something that is a great thing for activating macrophages.
Yeah, and we make it ourselves. It's just that people have, because of our deep. So, like, When we have a detox issue, when we have, like you mentioned, you're in a moldy building and you were not sick before you went in there, and then, you know, 6 months later you're as sick as you can remember being, and you're stuck,
right?
And you're having this crisis. You know, your body, if one pathway gets clogged, it'll try to speed up the 7 or 8 that are unclogged. And so that's mm-hmm. that's the beauty of the body. It's got redundancy and redundancy and redundancy. It's the it's so good at triaging. You know, we can only hope to be, you know, a fraction that good. But it's mm-hmm. going to, if you have a methylation weakness mm-hmm. and your methylation is slow, then your sulfation by default is under more pressure, because
right.
more crud is going to get pushed over into that, you know, hopper and that pathway and have to get flushed out. So there's a lot more to do. We could, you know, a lot more to talk about on sulfur and
well, I'll have you back on after your book comes out. How will that be?
That sounds great. And I'm looking forward to that. We're getting real close to the end, and I'm excited to, you know, just help people navigate the medical matrix. I mean, that's what we're talking about. And I'm not trying to make it sound like, you know, medicine is horrible. It's not true. I mean,
medicine is good for acute disease, but what we're talking about today is chronic disease, and it's not so good for that.
No.
So that's,
you know, when babies
that's really
are,
what
yeah,
you need to know. If you have pneumonia, you best get to a doctor and get an antibiotic. But if you take too many antibiotics, you're going to get sick. So come to us, and we'll or a holistic doctor, and we'll get you straightened out when too many antibiotics have wrecked your gut bacteria. So.
Absolutely. We always look at the gut first. That's like, you know,
right.
that's what you do. And if you can, you know, if you identify a problem in the liver or in the lymphatic system or in the mm-hmm. immune system, and we run and treat that. But if we jump over the gut problem, it'll come back to haunt us. So we have people do boot camp gut rebuilds.
Well, why don't you give your contact information before we go off the air?
Sure. So I run a practice in Boise, Idaho. The name of my clinic is Red Mountain Natural Medicine. That's my physical office location. And then, of course, I have mm-hmm. my kind of research platform and internet blog, beyondmthfr.com. Either one of the so if you go to beyondmthfr.com and you'll find my phone number to my office, contact us. It's right there. If you check out my clinic page, it's redmountainclinic.com. Either one of those will get you in the pipeline, and I've got a great staff. Like you have a wonderful staff, so you're I'm always handled very well by Dr. Kolb's HR coordinator and marketing person mm-hmm. who does great work. And so I try to have a good staff too that'll make it real easy for you to ask questions or contact us as well.
Great. Well, be sure to get us a copy of your book when it comes out, and we'll get you back on and we'll finish the discussion. Obviously, this is a big topic. There's many different aspects to it. And I think the message really to everybody is functional medicine is a much more intelligent form of medicine. It is much more useful. It is not pharmaceutical-based so much as it is supplement-based to optimize these cycles and the traffic jams that can occur. Detox is critical. We are all, I mean, I don't think there's a person on the planet that doesn't need to think about detox, because our planet has become so toxic. And so it would behoove you to get a physician that understands functional medicine.
Amen.
N-A-K.
If you find functional medicine AK, you might as well get on a plane and fly over there and see Dr. Kolb or come see me, because if you find both of those together...
booking now into January to see me, so it's not easy to get in. Yeah, it isn't. But anyway... But thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate you giving us all this information, and I look forward to your book.
Well, you'll be you'll have a copy in the not too distant future, and I look forward to coming back on and sharing it with your audience.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Rosenberg. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week we will be talking about dreams with David Lowe. We had David Lowe on before with his book, but he is a dream expert, and I hadn't done dreams in a while, so that should be fun. Please join us next week.